In this episode of Conversations from the Classroom, we speak with English teacher Gemma McGill from St. Paul's Secondary School in Greenhills, County Dublin. Gemma tells us about how she uses drama in the classroom to develop students' confidence and oral language skills, how the joy of reading is fostered by drawing on a wide variety of novels, and the positive impact graphic novels can play in drawing students into reading. We hope that you enjoy. I'm here today with Gemma McGill. So welcome, Gemma. Lovely to talk to you today. Would you be able to just introduce yourself and tell me a little bit about your school context?
I have been a teacher for 4 years. I teach in St. Paul's Secondary School in Greenhills in Dublin 12. There's about 400, just over 400 girls in the school at the moment. Coming from lots of different places, different backgrounds, it is a DESH school. It's a wonderful school. It has a very large cohort of teachers from lots of different backgrounds that really puts the student in the centre. That is a big thing. And taking care of a child holistically as well will be a huge part of the modus operandi in the school.
That's lovely to hear, Gemma. Thanks so much. So I might just start with a question. How do you use drama to develop students' confidence in speaking in your junior cycle English classroom?
Yeah, I think it's maybe one of the primary challenges that we have is getting them to articulate an idea and sometimes just to speak up in class. I think there are quite a lot of students that if you let them, they would say nothing in the day. So it's about trying to get particularly kind of low level, low stakes strategies to get them to talk to each other. At the beginning of this year in January, I had first years and we worked on storytelling. We worked on, well, what makes a good story, and that it's not just about the narrative itself, that it's about how you tell a story as well. So we did a few games to kind of to gather confidence. So Augusto Boal is a Brazilian theatre director, and his type of theatre is called the theatre of the oppressed. So it's where you're kind of constantly zoning in on someone who is being oppressed, perhaps physically, emotionally, whichever way we can kind of identify that. And he has a huge pantheon of games that you can play. And the one that I love to play with students is called Kites or Clotheslines. And this is where you give them two options and you say you go to this wall if you're a kite, and you go to the window wall if you're a clothesline, and you clap your hands and they have to make a decision very, very fast. And the idea is that you then engage with each student individually. Now, obviously, it depends on how large your group is. Sometimes you look for volunteers. But the idea is that at the end of, say, 10 minutes of that game, every kid has articulated an opinion, you know, and that you give a different one every single time. So you have kites or clotheslines is generally what you start with. And kids might give the suggestion that, well, I'm a clothesline because I'm really dependable and people can put things on me and it's okay, I don't mind. And then other kids are very lofty with, oh, I'm a kite because I love to be free and I love to be up in the air and things like that. The other aspect of the game is that kids can go in the middle then as well if they don't make a decision immediately. And the idea is that they have to be convinced by either side. So they can change sides, and then you engage with them on, well, why did you decide to change, or, you know, what compelled you to go from one side to another one? Wonderful controversial ones are things like a bar of chocolate versus hot chocolate gets a great rise out of kids, or things like the beach or the mountains and things like that. They all get a chance to articulate opinion. It's a great way of kind of getting them to think on their feet, but also kind of bringing them into the conversation as well.
It sounds like a really enjoyable way to kind of bring them out of themselves a little bit. What benefits do you think discussion and debating have in the English classroom?
I mean, there's kind of endless reasons why these things are so, so important. I think kids have to learn how to articulate an opinion, and they have to know how to debate people properly. I mean, most of what happens online is people not knowing how to debate and not knowing how to kind of articulate themselves properly, and trolling and things like that. My God, how awful those things are. And if they're doing it in a safe and comfortable and low stakes environment, like their English class, where they know the person beside them and they know the, you know, 20 other kids in their class, and the people aren't going to laugh at them if they articulate a point, then that's huge for building confidence. I have only two rules in my classroom. And the first one is please be polite. And the second one is you do not have to preempt your answer with a qualifying statement. And discussion is a huge thing as well. I mean, again, for a shy kid or anyone who lacks confidence in their opinion, you have to be able to talk out ideas. You have to be able to develop them. And sometimes bouncing an idea off another person gives you the tools to do that, or you might have a different interpretation to something that other people will. And it's in that respect, it's really important that they learn how to discuss things and how to debate respectfully and how to formulate an opinion and stick to it, or know that an idea can change.
So a lot of strategies there that helped kind of bring students out of themselves. What strategies have you found useful for encouraging reluctant readers?
So before I was a secondary school teacher, I taught with the Irish Board of Speech and Drama. And the best piece of advice I ever got from that is you give them lots and lots of choice and you get them to pick what they like, get them to figure out what they like. You have a wonderfully large bookshelf in school. And I would say, look, if a kid is 12 or 13 and they want to read a Jacqueline Wilson book, which might be for a 9 or a 10 year old, let them. And that might lead them on to, like, and say, you might say, oh, well, if you like that, maybe you might like this book, or it might have similar themes. That graphic novels help an awful lot with that as well, because there's literally less text for them to read. There's not as much for them to decode and to decipher with it. And because it is a visual medium, and most kids are far more used to having a visual medium than reading a book, you'll always get kids who want to read a Transformers comic. That's fine. It is a piece of art. It is a piece of literature. It might not be, you know, Pride and Prejudice, but you will have lots of kids who won't ever want to read Pride and Prejudice. And that's fine too. Yeah, finding them something that they like is the challenge, I think, with it. And to ask them what they like, what are they interested in? And I think that is really the key, is figuring out what they want.
So the next thing that I wanted to ask you then is around your use of text from the prescribed list. Do you use non-literary text or other media to support the learning and expand out on the text that you are using from the prescribed list?
Yeah, I think it's really important, particularly when you come in fresh with a group, to kind of examine the cultural context of that book. For example, we did Buddy this year by Nigel Hinton, which was written in 1982. So even before I was born. So my concept of what that world is, it's kind of handed down to me from my parents, or it's from things that I have picked up from TV or from other media and things like that. So the way in for them to understand that world is to give them information from it. So putting up pictures, I had a newspaper article from the miners' strike, a little thing on Margaret Thatcher, you know, getting them to think about, well, what was the world like then? What were the limitations? What was it possible for this kid to do and to be? And then looking at, like, his parents' generation, because his parents are so central to that novel as well. So looking at Buddy Holly, playing them the song, playing them every day, and getting them to understand what was the world like in the 1960s then, so the generation before. And I think it's such a nice level playing field when kids come in, and everyone has to learn the cultural context. No one is coming in with preconceived notions, because they're all experiencing this as they go. So I think that's really important. So looking for kind of newspaper articles, little short films, looking at photographs of the era as well. The other thing that they were really fascinated by was money in it, obviously, because they use pounds, they use sterling in it, and also with inflation and things like that. So when they had mentions of money, of how much money he had or money that he took from his dad, I would put the currency converter up so that they would understand that 30 pounds in 1982 money is about kind of 56 pounds, which is about, you know, 67 euro, you know, like, sort of thing. So you're giving them kind of a context and a way into that, because the other themes within that book are very universal. So things like anxiety in teenagers, not feeling like you fit in, being conflicted, being worried about your parents, that stuff doesn't get old. But the world is what you have to look at, and the world is what you have to bring in and explain to them. I think those are very kind of important things around when you're teaching a text. You're not teaching a text completely. You were teaching context. You were teaching what that world is. So yeah, finding the relevant source material is really, really important. Definitely.
Hey, lovely. So yeah, buddy with your first years. That's a nice bit of numeracy added into the mix there as well with the conversion.
It's cross-curricular. Exactly.
Okay, so my final question for you today then would be, what is the most important thing to have in place for learning to take place in the English junior soccer classroom, in your opinion?
Man, I like to defer to Paul Guinness on that one, the author of The Teacher's Toolkit. This idea that there are four things that need to be in place when there is learning going on. The first is maybe the most important one. Making sure that they are safe, making sure that they are comfortable. Beyond that, I think it's important to have the other three things in mind when you're formulating a lesson. So things like experiences that are out of the ordinary are more likely to be remembered than if you're just chalk and talk for the entire classroom. Peer-to-peer learning would be a big thing that I can say it as many times as I want, but if their friend says it, 100% they are more likely to remember that. Or if their friend explains something to them, they're probably, yeah, again, more likely to remember that. So this is where discussion and debate is really important. Getting them to do low stakes think pair share and things like that will always help them hugely. And then finally, fundamentally, everybody wants to work stuff out for themselves, and dictating and throwing something up on the board and saying, take that down and that's it, and not having any kind of discussion or debate or getting them to understand it in context of maybe the wider thing that you're looking at, that's not great. They're probably not going to engage with that. Showing them an example, modeling it. I did speech writing with sixth years. I actually went and, you know, wrote them a speech for the 2020 question, I think, the where alien overlords have come and decided to eradicate the world, and you have to make the case for humanity. So we'd done persuasive language, we'd done language of argument. I typed them out a speech and I was like, read it out to them, and I was like, go work with the person beside you, see what you can see. See if you can see where the speaker is doing these things. It sparks debate. It gets them talking, you know, and get them to think, get them to think critically. So, yeah, it always delights me when they figure stuff out. Absolutely. Figure it out for themselves. 100%. Mm-hmm.
Gemma, thank you so much for your time today. It's been really lovely speaking with you.
To hear more from Junior Cycle Talks, search for us on SoundCloud or anywhere that you listen to your podcasts.